Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star one on your touch-tone phone to ask a question. I would like to inform all parties that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Anne Mangold. Thank you. You may begin.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining OSHA for this teleconference, where we will be discussing the launch of a national dialogue on hazardous chemical exposure in the workplace. I will now turn the call over to Dr. David Michaels, Assistant Secretary of Labor for Occupational Safety and Health, who will deliver remarks, and then we will open it up for questions. Dr. Michaels?
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining me. Today, we at OSHA are formally initiating a national dialogue with our stakeholders on ways to prevent work-related illness caused by exposure to hazardous substances. The workplace hazards you usually hear about are the ones you can see: trenches and silos, fall hazards in forklifts, electrical wiring, machines with moving parts. But many of the most serious hazards are the silent killers, the ones we can't see: airborne chemicals, bloodborne pathogens, and fine particles of dust. Some of these invisible, silent killers work slowly over years of continuous exposure. American workers use tens of thousands of chemicals every day. While many of these chemicals are known or suspected of being harmful, only a small number are regulated in the workplace. New chemicals are being introduced into work sites every year, and we're struggling to keep pace with the potential hazards. As a result, 40 years after the creation of OSHA, thousands of American workers are still becoming ill and dying from exposure to hazardous chemicals. OSHA's permissible exposure limits, or PELs, have historically been the cornerstone of our approach to managing worker exposure to hazardous chemicals. OSHA's PELs are regulatory limits on the amount or concentration of a substance allowed in the air for the purpose of protecting workers against the health effects of overexposure to hazardous substances. Although thousands of chemicals are used every day in American workplaces, OSHA has exposure limits for fewer than 500. And many of these PELs are dangerously out of date and do not adequately protect workers. We need more efficient, effective ways to protect our workers, and we welcome new ideas, new perspectives, and practical solutions. Past efforts to update our PELs have been largely unsuccessful. Since 1971, OSHA has successfully established or updated PELs for only about 30 chemicals, and we've issued only one new exposure limit since the year 2000. As a result, many workers are currently being exposed to levels of chemicals that are legal but not safe. The process through which OSHA issues new exposure limits or updates old ones is broken, and that's why we've issued this request for information, to begin a dialogue with our stakeholders to help prevent work-related illnesses and better protect the health of America's workers. So the first step in this dialogue is this publication of a request for information in the Federal Register. We're asking stakeholders to help us identify the best approaches to managing chemical hazards and strategies for updating our permissible exposure limits. We are particularly interested in ideas about possible streamlined approaches for risk assessment and feasibility analyses, and alternative approaches for managing chemical exposures. Among the approaches we're asking about are control banding, task-based approaches, and informed substitution. The comment period for this request for information will be open for 180 days. This country is respected and renowned around the world for innovation. We have an opportunity over the next 6 months to show what we can do when we put our best minds to a worthy goal of protecting our economy's most valuable asset, the lives of our workers. We believe this RFI and the dialogue it will initiate is an important step towards protecting the current and future generations of workers who build and sustain our nation's economy. The goal of this public dialogue is to give stakeholders and OSHA a forum to develop innovative approaches to reduce occupational illnesses and improve the health of workers in the United States. In coming months, we will announce additional ways for members of the public to participate in this conversation. So we invite you to visit our website, where you can learn more about these issues and how the public can participate in this dialogue. We value everyone's input, and we look forward to hearing from all stakeholders throughout the process. Again, thank you for joining me on this call.
Thank you, Dr. Michaels. We will now open it up for questions.
Thank you. To ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone, unmute your line, and record your name and media affiliation. Please limit your questions to one question and one follow-up. Please stand by. It will take a moment for the questions to come through. Our first question is from Dave Jamieson with the Huffington Post. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks everyone for doing the call. Dr. Michaels, I was wondering if you could, I mean, obviously the rulemaking process can be a long one. I just wanted to clarify if the goal here was to get some new rules through during this administration, and if you feel you'll have adequate time to do that. And was also hoping you could explain kind of why you were saying past efforts have been largely unsuccessful with only one new exposure limit since 2000. I was wondering if you could explain why that is.
Let me divide those questions up. This particular effort is aimed not just at rules, but at overall approaches. We know that our stakeholders recognize the need to better protect workers from chemical exposure. Every chemical manufacturing firm we deal with says that they have standards stronger than OSHA's. We want to look at how different manufacturing companies, companies that use chemicals, public health experts, unions, how we all look at these issues, how we can come up with some solutions, which may be regulatory, but they may not be. And so this particular effort isn't aimed at trying to get some new rules out in the next 2 years or so. We have other efforts underway. We're working very hard on our silica standard. We've got another number of other things in the pipeline. But this effort really is a longer-term effort, which we believe will pay off even before we issue new standards. Stepping back, one of the things this request for information does is lays out the history of OSHA's attempts, first the requirements that we face in issuing new standards and the history that we've gone through in developing standards and improving them. What we talk about in the RFI is that for us to issue a standard, we have to go through extensive analyses of both the economic feasibility and the technological feasibility of what we're proposing. And that can take years and a huge amount of staff time to do. In addition, we have to do extensive analyses to show the significant risk of the exposures we're talking about. So we do a very large risk assessment. And we have to do those for all the specific industries that we impact. That's a tremendous amount of work, and we end up producing documents that are hundreds, if not thousands, of pages long. That's really for one specific chemical. So there's got to be a better way. And we can't go chemical by chemical, because if we do that, it will take centuries for us to address all the chemicals that are out there. So we're not going to stop doing regulations and issuing permissible exposure limits for important chemicals, but we think there have got to be better ways to take this issue on, and that's really what this initiative is about.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Robert Iafola with BloombergBNA.com. Your line is open.
Hey, Dr. Michaels. Thanks for taking these questions on this. The RFI cites OSHA's meetings back in 96 and 97 to gather information on updating the PELs, and in 2000, OSHA held stakeholder meetings and solicited comments online, and OSHA also appointed an internal task force to work with stakeholders and teams with NIOSH on illicit chemicals that especially needs updates. So in light of these previous efforts to gather information and how out of date these PELs are, how would you respond to criticism that putting out a broad RFI is slow and inefficient because it will get back much of the same information that OSHA has already heard from stakeholders? Or to put it another way, why wouldn't it be better for OSHA to solicit a more focused feedback with a PRM and that makes specific proposals?
I think what you have to do is look further into the proposal. We give all that history, but what we're doing here is asking not about specific chemicals, which is one of the things we did in the past, but to go through some of the approaches that really developed over the last 5 or 10 years that NIOSH has been working on, that the chemical industry has been working on, particularly the pharmaceutical industry, things like control banding and hazard banding, where you look at chemicals in terms of categories, and you say that for chemicals that have certain properties, you treat them all the same, rather than do it chemical by chemical. Or looking at some of the more sophisticated analyses, like these quantitative structure-activity relationships. So there are different approaches that we've never really put on the table. So let's evaluate these and talk about how we could use these. How do we get this discussion into the 21st century? And that's what this is about.
Our next question is from Kent Hoover with American City Business Journal. Your line is open.
That's okay. My question's been asked, so thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Christopher Cole with Inside OSHA. Your line is open.
Hi, Dr. Michaels. Appreciate the call. Just wanted to ask, sort of related to earlier questions, but are any of these actual regulatory approaches, it seems like some of them would require, if you wanted to enforce them, expanded use of general duty clause. Is that the case, or are we talking about voluntary approaches, or any of these regulatory?
I think you're confusing two different things right here. This is really to discuss ways that we can move forward in general on a regulatory basis. So this could lead to this already occurs voluntarily. Many, many employers, many manufacturers use these approaches for their own workers, and also the chemical industry uses a lot of these approaches in their responsible care program. What we're talking about is if OSHA is going to take something on as a policy, what should we do? How do we evaluate those? What do we eventually, how do we implement this? Please don't confuse this with enforcement. This is not an enforcement effort at all. This really is to think about how we could develop these policies in general that will really be used across the country.
Okay. Just one other thing. Given that this was listed as one of your earliest priorities, can you kind of explain why it's year 7 almost here and OSHA's just now getting to issuing this?
We've been working on this for a while, but we've taken other steps in the same process. We're still looking at specific chemicals. We had a whole effort with our stakeholders to identify chemicals of interest, and we're gathering information on those. We're stepping back, though, and saying, in this case, we recognize that the chemical-by-chemical approach in the long run is not going to work. We obviously will move forward on certain chemicals. In addition to silica, beryllium is now being, we've put together a proposal that's now going through interagency review. But we have to think in a much more broad way, so this is our opportunity to do that.
Just a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. Our next question comes from Dave Johnson with ISHN Magazine. Your line is open.
Hi, Dr. Michaels. Early in your remarks, you made mention of infectious diseases as a hazardous material. I wanted to clarify whether this dialogue is just about chemical substances and exposure to chemicals, or is it a more broader definition of hazardous materials, which also would include things like infectious diseases?
This really is specific to chemicals. I was talking more broadly about sort of silent killers in that case, and perhaps I was being a little too poetic. But thanks for that clarification, Dave.
Okay.
Our next question is from Cheryl Hogue with Chemical and Engineering News. Your line is open.
Thank you, and thank you, Dr. Michaels, for taking these calls. My question is, you said that you pointed out that chemical manufacturers and pharmaceutical makers have programs in place that are tougher than what OSHA requires, and that the chemical industry has a responsible care program. Are you also looking for perhaps involvement with the chemical makers on seeing that they're for product stewardship issues, to see that their products are used appropriately by those who might buy them and use them in another type of manufacturing? Didn't know if that was also on the table.
We have been in close contact with various chemical manufacturers, and we expect a much more broad input from the industry in this. There's no question they share the same goal that we do. When I speak to groups of manufacturers, I'll often ask the question, how many of you use the OSHA PELS in setting limits in your workplaces? And a small number of hands, if at all, go up when I do that. What goes on now is large chemical manufacturers have their own, you know, health departments, toxicology, environmental health departments, who set their own limits, and they're always safer than OSHA's. And then in many cases, when they go out to the companies that buy their products, they insist that they keep exposures below the OSHA limits. So we're already working with a lot of chemical companies around this. We're interested in their experience, what they've learned, the approaches they've taken. We think that they can make a very big contribution to this effort.
Thank you.
There are no questions in the queue at this time. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. Please stand by for those questions to come through. Our next question is from Jerry Laws with Occupational Health and Safety Magazine. Your line is open.
Thank you, and again, thank you, Dr. Michaels, for having this call. You mentioned, and one of the possible alternative approaches that's mentioned in the RFI is informed substitution. What do you mean by that? And also, how does GHS dovetail with this? You mentioned that, and that's one of them listed. And are you simply thinking of better safety data sheets?
Well, let's go back to the first one. We actually have a part of the effort that we've been working on for the last few years is encouraging informed substitution within the hierarchy of controls. If you can eliminate a hazardous chemical and use a less hazardous one in its place, you've certainly reduced risk. And we have a whole website up on that, and it's easily found on our website. We have two websites, which let me suggest you all look there. One is on informed substitution, and we have a very useful website which goes through how an employer, particularly a small employer, can evaluate the chemicals that they use and choose chemicals that are less hazardous and substitute for the more hazardous chemicals. We're asking additional questions about that in the RFI. The other website we have up, if you haven't seen it, I would highly recommend going to it, is a comparison of our permissible exposure limits with the recommended exposure limits, or the RELs, that the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health has issued. And many of those RELs are quite a bit stronger or more protective than OSHA's. On that same website, though, also has the California permissible exposure limits, which these are limits issued by the California state government, and they are enforceable in California by Cal OSHA. And it has the recommended time-weighted averages issued by the threshold limit values issued by the ACGIH, which is a private standards body. And as you'll see, in virtually every case, the OSHA PEL is significantly weaker than those other recommendations or legal limits. And it's really a problem. I mean, for those of you who aren't following this, you know, for giving an example, N-hexane, which is a widely used solvent, still used in the United States, great, widely used abroad. It got some press recently when Apple announced it was banning the use of N-hexane in the final stages of assembly of the iPhone, iPad, etc. There had been one outbreak where more than 100 workers suffered adverse neurological effects following exposure in a factory in Taiwan. There had also been studies in Hong Kong in a printing factory where workers who were exposed to a fraction of the OSHA permissible exposure limit developed peripheral neuropathy. Our PEL is 10 times higher than the NIOSH recommended REL or that of the ACGIH. So we want our stakeholders who are aware of this to see there are lower limits that have been recommended by others, and they should look at those in the meantime until we come up with a better system for issuing regulations for dealing with these issues. The other question you asked was about how this fits into GHS, and it really does. And we have a whole section, actually, in the RFI on that to ask questions about it, because now we're collecting all this information. Manufacturers and suppliers are providing information. The question is, how can they use that information, and how can we use that information to ensure workers are better protected? So we think it's a very much linked effort, and we're looking forward to people's input on it.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Robert Iafola with BloombergBNA.com. Your line is open.
Yeah, I have a question about OSHA's potential changes to rulemaking processes. Would those changes need to be codified in a rulemaking, or would they be an informal policy change that could potentially be changed by, say, other administrations? Or how would that work?
It would depend on what changes we want to make. I mean, there are components of our rulemaking that are in our law, and they would have to be changed by Congress. There are other components of our rulemaking that are in executive order. There are some that are results of court decisions. There are a lot of that are just tradition. So we're looking at those, and depending on what change we decide to make or what we're going to recommend, then we'll act accordingly. But it's premature to even think, how we'll make the changes, because we don't know what changes we're going to make yet.
And do you have any rough estimate on timeline for the consideration of procedural changes?
Procedural changes is one of the things we're thinking about, but this RFI will be open for 6 months. It's notable, for those of you who don't follow this so carefully, is the comments we get will be public, and we really want to make this a dialogue. So we're encouraging stakeholders to enter early and often, give us their comments, and we could start that discussion. We'll also be working on other venues that have this discussion other than just putting information and putting comments into a docket. So we really can have this dialogue. I don't think we'll have any answers in 6 months, but I think we'll have a very useful and robust dialogue, and that will lead to a consensus around how we can all move forward together on protecting American workers from chemical exposures.
Our last question is from Dave Johnson with ISHN Magazine. Your line is open.
Oh, thanks for letting me in. Dr. Michaels, I think many of our magazine's readers are not familiar, especially in smaller facilities, are not familiar with control banding. Could you explain control banding? And is this something that OSHA could mandate, or would it need special legislation, an act of Congress, to be able to mandate control banding?
Yeah, control banding is something that's really been developed first in the pharmaceutical industry, but is used widely in the chemical industry and others. Essentially, putting chemicals in categories on the basis of what we know about them, either by their structure or their toxicological properties, and saying these are the characteristics of certain chemicals, and they fit into this particular band. That's particularly useful when you have esoteric chemicals that you don't know as much about, but you could say we believe it sort of fits into this, into one particular band or another band. And each band you would treat differently. There are some bands you might say, well, this has, you really don't have to worry much, and we'll have certain sort of ventilation controls on that, and that will be the end. But other ones you may say, these are so dangerous you can't allow any skin contact, and you have to wear, powered air purified, air-purified respirators. The approach fits very well into GHS because manufacturers and suppliers have to categorize chemicals, and so we can use that information in terms of control banding. How you implement control banding beyond a voluntary basis is some of the questions that we're asking about. Right now, there are folks who are control banding in their workplaces. If we were to move toward that on a regulatory basis, we could do it through regulation. But all of our regulations take many years to write and to develop and to do these analyses, and all those rules would apply if we decide to take that route. But before deciding to take that route, we really want the input of our stakeholders.
Thank you.
Okay, at this time we are going to conclude the call. We thank you again for joining us today.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time.
Thank you so much.